welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and coming up in this hour, true history. Later on, we hear Mr. President from 1947. But right now, the cavalcade of America with a story called The Iron Mountain, which is best summarized by a front-page article from the Miami News on January 26, 1950, which said that a five-year American search for iron ore is climaxed today with news of a rich strike overseas. Thousands of American engineers have tramped over lands bordering the South and North Atlantics. They have found deposits in Labrador and in Liberia. Today, they report finding the largest and richest iron ore deposit in the history of the world. Hear the story of how it happened next in the September 5th, 1950 broadcast from NBC of the Cavalcade of America.
The DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry, presents The Cavalcade of America. Tonight's star, Dane Clark.
I can see it now as I saw it the first time. A humpbacked purple silhouette squatting on the horizon. Eerie, ominous, foreboding. The Big Mountain.
Tonight, our DuPont cavalcade brings you a suspense drama of adventure and discovery set in the jungle heart of Venezuela. Our star, Dane Clark, as Ronnie Latham.
We're the guys who slogged our way through snake-infested jungles. We're the guys who laughed at native superstitions, who hacked our way through a wilderness to come up with the greatest mineral discovery of our time. But let's face facts. Let's face them. Nothing we did could have been done without the backing of a group of men who never got within 3,000 miles of the Big Mountain, never saw it, never knew it existed. Do you want to know where an adventure story like ours begins? The last place in the world you'd ever look. The boardroom of the United States Steel Corporation in Pittsburgh, half a dozen years ago. A quiet room, a group of quiet men listening to a report by J.G. Munson, vice president in charge of raw materials.
Gentlemen, we face a critical situation, and it would be criminal to blind ourselves to the facts. At the present rate of peacetime steel consumption, the country's current reserve of good quality iron ore in the Lake Superior District will be used up in 20 years. This nation has built itself for 50 years out of that Mesabi iron ore range, and it's reaching the bottom of the barrel.
So they estimate 20 years.
If America should become involved in another war, it would take even less.
Can't believe it. You've given us the facts, Munson. Pretty brutal facts, we all agree. What are your proposals?
Find high-quality iron ore. The country needs it. Find it fast, anywhere, any place. Search for high-grade ore. Not field operations here and there, but the biggest, most comprehensive ore search in history.
What will it cost, Mr. Munson?
There's no way of answering that question. It'll probably cost millions.
Yeah, it may turn up nothing.
That's right. But we have the resources, the finances, the know-how to conduct an operation as extensive as this. So it's a gamble we must take. I repeat that. We must take. United States Steel must take.
It began in 1946. Hundreds of men in a dozen different lands scouring the world for iron. Reports flying into Pittsburgh from Quebec, from Tunisia, British Columbia, from Sweden, Guatemala, Africa, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Brazil, Newfoundland. And the answer on most of those reports?
Negative.
No good.
Nothing of value.
But one report really showed promise. Chief of the field forces in Venezuela was Mack Lake. He grabbed a plane in Caracas and was in Pittsburgh 14 hours later to talk to Munson and his associates.
Here's the situation, Mr. Munson. We know there's iron ore in Venezuela, plenty of it. We've found some pretty good locations, but we're sure that the pay dirt hasn't been found yet. The mountain ridges on which all the major iron ore deposits have been found so far twist back and forth, east and west, right through the heart of the deepest, thickest tropical jungle. It's practically impossible to survey it by foot. It would take years, too many years.
Well, what do you propose, Mac?
An aerial survey of the whole region.
That'll be a mighty expensive operation.
It'll cost plenty.
We're in this up to our hip boots as it stands, Mac. There's no turning back. Order the survey.
By January 1947, the air survey was in full swing. I came into the picture just about then, fresh out of engineering school, the ink on my diploma still wet. Our field headquarters was set up in Ciudad Bolivar, a little stew pot of a city on the banks of the Orinoco. I remember the hours we spent huddled over the strips of air photos, Foca, Kielstedt, K. Burrell, Jose Nieto, and myself, tracing the mountain ridges as they twisted back and forth south of the Orinoco, east of the Caroni River. Then on the photos, we saw the iron pot mountain range suddenly run westward. We traced it as it crossed the Caroni River and headed like an arrow toward a group of high cliffed hills that rose some 2,000 feet above the surrounding savanna. K. Burrell called over to Jose.
Jose.
Mande, senor.
What do they call this place?
Where, senor?
Here. Does it have a name?
Si. That is what the natives call the Big Mountain.
Hmm?
It is named Cerro Bolivar.
Cerro Bolivar. The Big Mountain. Everything about it seemed right. Every scrap of evidence we could pick up from the air photos seemed to say this was it. This might be the payoff. The decision was made quickly with no arguments.
There's no use waiting. Taking any chances on waiting. We'll take the Jeep and head out for the Big Mountain at dawn.
Our Jeep gave up the ghost a few miles out of La Perita. So we hoofed it into town and, miracle of miracles, found a native who owned a truck. His name was Sebastian Sandoval.
Oh, no, senor. I am very sorry, but not to the Big Mountain.
Oh, why not to the Big Mountain?
It is a bad place.
What's bad about it?
Men have gone there and never come back. Sometimes even from here we can hear the mountain shake itself.
And you call yourself a truck driver, huh?
I am a truck driver.
Oh, don't give me that now.
I drive the truck like nobody.
Yeah, like nobody.
At Maracaibo, they call me a one truck driver.
A one truck driver, huh?
You think I'm not, eh?
I think you're not, hey.
By golly, I show you. I show you who is the best truck driver in Venezuela. A pinkito with grams.
As we approached the Big Mountain, we could see deep red slashes where landslides had roared down the face of the escarpment. It looked like something out of Conan Doyle's Lost World. Sharp precipices rising from the floor of the savanna, crowned with three separate peaks. The base of the hill was heavily wooded. We parked the truck and we had to hack a trail through with our machetes.
Let's take a breather.
Okay. All right, hold it up, Sandoval.
Si, senor. Oh.
Cigarette, Kielstedt?
Thanks.
Sandoval, you want to smoke? Sandoval, what are you dreaming about?
Listen.
Huh? What am I supposed to be listening for?
You don't hear it?
Hear what?
The mountain. It is grinding its teeth.
Oh, you're hearing things. Come on, come on. Take a smoke, will you?
Hey, listen, amigo. You think the mountain has no teeth, eh? How you know about these things? We live here, we know. My father and his father, you think they just make up about these things? Men have come here and been crushed by the mountain.
Oh,
do not laugh.
No, no, look. I'm not laughing at you. It's a dead serious proposition, and I know it. If it'll do you any good, I'm just as scared as you are. But so what? We can't turn back now. A lot of men have spent a lot of time in the pile of jack to get us this far. So settle down. Take it easy. Everything will be over.
Listen.
Landslide. Get behind the trees. Quick, it's coming.
Houston. I'm okay. Sandoval. Sandoval!
All right, senor.
Ronnie! Get over here, quickly.
What's the matter?
Look at these boulders that slid down. Look at them. Iron.
Come on.
Let's get going to where all this came from. On top. Up there, on top.
Sweating, puffing, forgetting the snakes, we crawled our way up to the summit. And there we stood, not quite believing our eyes, not daring to believe. A mountain of iron. That's what it is. A whole blasted mountain of iron. Solid iron.
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
It may only be a crust. You never can tell how deep it is until you drill.
But look down the side of that precipice. It's 300 feet straight down. You can see that it's solid iron ore.
Looks good. Wonderful. But we'll have to drill before we can find out for sure. Hey, let's take some sidings, make a rough survey, then beat it back to town and register the claim.
The next night, Kay Burrell took one look at our sample, stripped off his coat, and began to sketch out a flat map of the territory. Kielstead, myself, and Jose began work on drawing up the claim.
I'll dictate, Rummy. You take it down on the typewriter.
Okay, start dictating.
Right. I, Folke Kielstead, citizen of the United States of America, resident of Ciudad Bolivar, declare the discovery of a mine named... Hey, what do we call it?
Well, I don't know. What do you suggest?
I'd like to name it after my wife, Carla.
Good idea. Carla it is.
The discovery of a mine named Carla Number One.
Carla.
For the purpose of surveying, I take as point of departure a stake of durable material placed at the summit of the westernmost peak of the mountain known as Cerro Bolivar.
We spent all night working on five separate claims. We knew we had struck something big, that we might have the richest iron deposit in the world in our fist, and we knew all we had to do was get our claim filed. About midnight, Jose went down to fetch sandwiches and coffee, and he was back in the office in 10 minutes.
Señor Gilstein.
What is it?
Señor Latham.
What's the matter?
The truck driver.
What about?
The cantina. When I went in to get the coffee, I saw him.
So what?
He has been talking all over the place.
What do you mean, talking?
Ram has loosened his tongue, señores. He's telling everyone about the Cerro Bolivar. The whole town knows about the iron.
Holy cats, we'll have every claim jumper in the country on our necks by morning.
What time does the registrar's office open, Jose?
8 o'clock, señor.
Okay. We can't take any chances. We'll be down there at 7:30.
At 7:30 the next morning, we handed our claims to the registrar.
Oh, I am sorry. So very sorry indeed, senores. But I cannot accept these papers.
Why not, senor?
Because they are all out of order. They have to be in long hand on government stamp paper.
But we didn't have any stamp paper.
Oh, I am very sorry, but the regulations, they are very clear on this point.
We have to do them over again, is that it?
I am afraid so, I'm sorry.
Now, wait a minute. Will you just look over the claim and make a note of the time we brought it in? Will you do that?
Yes, I can do that.
Well,
let me see now. Oh, my dear senores, this is all very disturbing indeed.
Very disturbing. Well, what is it?
A prior claim has been made to this territory.
Prior?
I received it this morning at my home.
It's for the same land? You're sure of it?
Positive. Cerro Bolivar.
Can we see the other claim?
Well, not until I enter in the registry book.
Well, when will that be?
As soon as possible. It must be entered in longhand. It takes time.
Yes, can we see it after you enter it?
But certainly.
All right. Jose, you stay here, and the minute the other claim is available, make a copy of it and get it back to our office.
Si, Señor Latham.
Senores, I am very, very sorry. Believe me, I hope you are not disturbed.
Disturbed? Don't be silly. We're not disturbed. We're fractured. First you see it, and then you don't. A country desperately in need of high-grade iron ore, U.S. Steel pouring millions into a worldwide search, a race against time. Then to find it. To find it in the heart of Venezuela. Find it. Only to have it snatched from under our very noses. Oh, it was rough. When we returned to the office, Mac Lake was there. He had flown in from Caracas. We told him the sad story.
Okay, what's done is done. Well, don't look so licked.
We are licked. That's what it adds up to.
Maybe not. Let's keep pushing ahead. Folka, get those claims in proper shape as soon as possible.
Well, they have to be done by hand.
Okay, call in the whole crew, engineers, everybody. Get them all on the job. We may have lost the round, but we haven't lost the fight.
About 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Jose got back from the registrar's office.
I've got a copy of the other claim, senor.
All right, let's take it in. Here's the other claim.
Good. Let's take a look at it.
Oh, if I ever get my hands on that truck driver, so
how does it look, Kay?
Well, it looks, Say, that's funny. Where's our map?
Right here.
Spread it out. I've got a sneaking suspicion, just an idea.
What do you mean, Kay?
Look here at this claim. First of all, it starts off by saying that they take as point of departure a stake of durable material to be placed on the farmland owned by one Miguel Armando. To be placed. Get that. That means they haven't put their marker down yet.
Hey, here's the farm on the map. It's over here.
All right, now let's give them the benefit of every doubt. Suppose we use as a starting point that corner of the property nearest to Cerro Bolivar. That's here. Here in the savanna, east of the hill. Our claim ran from the westernmost peak.
Do they overlap?
It's just a chance. A bare chance. Look. Let's not jump to conclusions. We'll have to plot it out. That's the only way to be sure. We've got to plot out their claims.
Burrell worked quietly, quickly. The rest of us stood at his shoulders, watching him sketch in the lines of our claim and the other. No one spoke. The only sound was the whir of the electric fans, the buzz of flies, the rattle of the ox carts through the narrow streets of the city. We waited.
Okay, there it is.
Well?
Well, they guessed, and they guessed wrong.
Are you sure, Kay?
I'm dead sure. Look here. We have 5 claims. 4 of them are absolutely in the clear. 1 claim, column number 5, may overlap one of theirs by maybe 100 meters in one corner. Nothing more.
So 4 of our claims are valid?
You bet they are.
All right, that's all we want to know. Gil, pull in every diamond drill we can put our hands onto. We've got to drill. Find out if the high-grade surface ore extends down to any depth. How many drills do we have at Piacor?
2 long-year rotary drills.
Order them to Cerro Bolivar.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Lake. How do you expect to go with those drills into the mountain? There are no roads, at least 3 rivers across a trail.
Build a road. Bridge the rivers. Those drills have got to be turning by July.
July. And the rains came. You know, rain doesn't fall at Cerro Bolivar. It just forms a sopping, wet wall from the clouds right down to the ground. Our bulldozers had chewed a road up the side of the hill by then, and the trucks followed after them, sloshing their way up to the summit, carrying the drills, the equipment we needed. Oh, it was tough work. But we did it. And 3 days after drilling started, we were ready to send back the core samples to see it at Bolivar for analysis and testing.
Gonna have a rough trip, Ronnie. Be careful. I understand the Carapo River has busted its banks.
We'll get through.
And keep those sample boxes dry. Tell Matt we've gone down 67 feet. There's no sign it's tapering off.
Okay. Can I bring you something back?
Yeah, a pair of dry socks.
Dry socks? Are you kidding? I bet there isn't anything dry south of Macy's. I'll see you.
Thanks. Good luck.
See the road, Jose?
Sure. Whenever the water is dirty, that's the road.
We must almost be at the bridge across the Carapo. You think we'll get across?
Maybe. Maybe not. It all depends.
Wait a minute. There's someone out ahead. Yeah, it's one of our drivers. Hold up.
Right.
What's wrong?
Can't get across. The water's 2 feet over the bridge.
Is the bridge holding?
So far.
Okay. Jose, check the sample boxes. Make sure the canvas around them is tight.
The jeep will never get across, senor.
That's right. But we will.
How?
On our own 2 feet. All right, come on, cut the motor.
But, senor Latham, the river is full of fish.
Well, what river isn't?
But this is Caribe fish.
Caribe fish?
Some call them piranhas, flesh eaters. They can eat a man's foot right down to the bone in a minute.
Oh? Grab a sample box and let's get started.
But, senor, but even if we get across on the other side, what then? How will we get to Ciudad Bolivar?
Jose, it's an old saying, never cross a bridge until you come to it. Doesn't say anything about worrying about what's on the other side. Come on, the water's fine. All right, grab my hand, Jose.
Si, senor.
Another couple of steps.
Si.
That's all. There. Easy now. I guess the fish are looking for juicier meat. Come on, up we go.
Gracias a Dios, we made it.
Yeah, we made it.
It's 50 miles to Ciudad Bolivar. 50 miles? How do we... Senor Latham, look.
Huh?
For Pete's sake.
Señores, buenos días. How'd you go, eh?
You.
Me, Sebastian Sandoval. How you, Keith?
You know, if I swore, if I ever laid eyes on you again, I'd plant one right on your kisser.
What's the matter? You don't like me no more, fellow?
Well, that all depends. Where's that thing you call a truck?
Under the tree there. Was coming back to La Parida when I got here. There's too much river. No hurry, I wait.
You want to be my pal again, huh?
Well, sure, you bet.
All right, how's about driving us back to town?
That makes us pals again, Guido?
Bosom pals.
Amigo mio. Hot ziggity zam. We scrammed.
By nightfall, we were back in Ciudad Bolivar. I parked my bosom pal, Sebastian, in the nearest cantino and made for the office. Mac Lake was waiting with John Hallenstein, our chief chemist.
How long before we can get the results, Holly?
Well, it'll take the boys until midnight to crush and quarter these samples. We'll get them into solution as soon as we can. I'd say we'd be able to do the tight trading about noontime.
Okay, get to work.
The big bell in the cathedral down the street had just tolled off noon when Hallenstein walked in.
Well, how does it shape up, Holly? Let's have it.
Very interesting. Very interesting and most unusual.
Holly.
Pure iron ore, as you know, is iron oxide, and consists of 30% by weight of oxygen and 70% by weight of iron.
Holly, we know that.
Theoretically,
yes.
Therefore, the purest iron ore would contain 70% iron.
Holly, what's the score?
I didn't believe it at first. I checked and rechecked, but it's true. These samples range from 59.10 to 67.3.
67.3?
They'll average out at about 64%.
That's incredible. Finest Mesabi ore averages between 50 and 55%. This is almost 10% richer. Richer than the Mesabi. I never believed it possible.
Well, it's 3 years now since U.S. Steel discovered the iron ore of Cerro Bolivar. Looking round, I can see lots of changes. The road up the mountain has been graded. The camp has taken on a look of efficiency, of permanency. And looking down from my headquarters now, I can see the airstrip, the pumping stations. I can see the bulldozers smoothing out the ground for the homes, the churches, the schools that will soon be rising down in the Sabana. Yes, we've come a long way. And there's still a long way to go before this Venezuelan ore can be fed to America's blast furnaces and become critically needed steel. But all those problems will be solved. The big point is that we've got Cerro Bolivar. We've got the Iron Mountain. And why have we got it? I'll tell you. We've got it because an American company had the bigness to accept a big responsibility. And there'll be no iron ore shortage in America, no matter how vast our needs, no matter what the demands in the next 20, 50, or even 100 years. And brother, that's important to a country whose very existence depends on steel. Our
thanks to Dane Clark and the Cavalcade Players for tonight's story, The Iron Mountain.
The Cavalcade of America on Tune 2 yesterday from September 5th, 1950 on NBC. It's an hour of true history on Tune 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to Mr. President, starring movie actor Edward Arnold. This episode from ABC heard on July 3rd, 1947.
Starring Edward Arnold.
Hello? Sit down, won't you? You know, it's strange how many people think the president is somehow superhuman, but believe me, it's not so. I have the same daily job of living that you do. The only thing is, most people rarely hear about that side of life in the White House. The true story I'm going to tell you now, for instance, well, it's hardly known at all. Now, which of our 32 presidents was I when it took place? I'll tell you later on. But meanwhile, see if you can't guess. One morning, I walked into my study, and as usual, she was already there. My secretary, I mean, Miss Sarah. Good morning, Miss Sarah.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Oh, why so glum?
I enjoyed romantic poetry when I was a high school girl, Mr. President, but I'm afraid I don't anymore.
That's the trouble with a lot of people, Miss Sari. They don't take time to enjoy life. Don't let it happen to you.
Ever since I walked in here this morning, the Vice President has been telephoning in a fury asking to see you. I've hardly had time to enjoy life.
Mr. Edwards has no sense of humor.
Nor any time to enjoy the poetry I had to read to him.
Did you happen to read him a poem beginning with, "If I Were King"?
Why, that's exactly the poem I read him. Now, why should Mr. Edwards be interested in that?
Well, there are more ways than one to skin a cat, Miss Sari. And more than one way of getting your vice president to come to see you. Haven't you read this morning's newspapers?
Mr. Edwards hasn't given me time.
I knew that poem would get him.
That is probably Mr. Edwards again.
Let me talk to him.
Miss Holmes speaking.
This is Mr. Edwards. Is the president in?
Yes, Mr. Edwards. Here he is.
Good morning, Mr. Edwards.
Mr. President, may I ask the meaning of your statement to the newspapers?
Certainly. Yesterday, you made a speech in Philadelphia. You explained what you would do if you were president.
And you referred the newspapers to some poem or other, "If I Were King."
It's simple enough. There was one trouble with that poet. He wasn't a king. There's one trouble with your speech. You're not a president. I am.
I made a serious speech on the economic crisis. It hardly called for so flippant a comment from you, sir.
I've got to bring you to your senses.
I'm not a small boy to be spanked in public, sir.
Mr. Edwards, we're in the worst depression the country has ever known. Banks are failing every day. Factories are closing. Millions of men and women are out of work. And you're recommending to the people a policy that can't help but lead to inflation and complete disaster.
The silver clause of the Sherman Act permits you to issue the maximum amount of currency backed by silver. That's what I would do if I were...
Mr. Edwards, we will never stop foreign countries from draining our gold reserves until we can reestablish their confidence in the American dollar. Not destroy it further by basing it on silver. And, Mr. Edwards, I wouldn't say if I were again. You're not the president. I am, and I expect to be for some time.
It's obvious, sir. We can't settle anything this way.
I've been hoping you'd say that, sir. Yes, sir, you can see me today at 2 o'clock.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
Now, let's get on with the day, Miss Sarah.
Yes, Mr. President. Your physician is here with a Mr. Mott.
Oh, have them in, will you, please?
This Mr. Mott, is he a friend of Dr. Raymond?
Yes, you might say so, Miss Sarah.
Dr. Raymond, come in, please.
Thank you, Miss Sarah.
I'll be in my office, Mr. President.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir. Mr. President, may I present Dr. Mott?
I am honored, sir.
I hope you don't mind our making you masquerade as Mr. I can't let anybody know you're a doctor.
I quite understand, sir.
Mr. President, we won't mince any words.
Please don't.
It's cancer, Mr. President.
Are you absolutely sure?
Dr. Mott...
Mr. President, in the roof of your mouth, you have a cancerous area about the size of a quarter.
But it's so small.
Yes, yes, I know. But if it goes untouched, it will spread to your throat, your stomach.
What treatment do you recommend?
An operation, Mr. President.
An operation? Is there any alternative?
Yes, Mr. President. Death.
Would it be a serious operation?
It's cancer, sir.
And where would you perform it? And when?
At once, sir, in Dr. Mott's private hospital in New York.
At once? You mean a week or so?
A day or so, Mr. President.
Dr. Mott, what provisions for secrecy can you make?
Oh, the usual in a private hospital, sir.
That's not enough, I'm afraid.
I don't understand,
sir. It's not possible for me simply to have a cancer operation and allow it to become publicly known.
But surely, sir, your staff can keep newspapermen away?
In the middle of the worst depression we've ever had? And millions of people holding me personally responsible?
Mr. President, your life is at stake.
How long will it take?
You'd be absent only a few days, sir.
All right, then. Good day, gentlemen.
President, I can send it over to the Treasury right away.
Uh-huh. The month's order for silver coinage, 3 million ounces. This is the minimum the law allows. How do you know I wasn't going to change my mind, Miss Searing?
That's my job, Mr. President.
You often know what I'm going to do before I do it myself, don't you?
Mr. Colby.
Miss Sarah, the door was open. Mr. President.
Mr. Colby, the press room is down the corridor.
It's important. I know I shouldn't break in, but it's very important.
Come outside and tell it to me, Mr. Colby.
Just a moment, Miss Searing. Go ahead, Colby.
I'm afraid it's private, sir. Please, Mr. President.
All right, Miss Searing.
Well, it's highly irregular. A newspaper man seeking an exclusive interview without an
appointment. Please, Miss Searing.
Yes, of course, Mr. President. No doubt, Mr. Colby, you lurked about till I was not at my desk.
I'm afraid I did, Miss Searing.
Yes, I thought so.
Now, Colby.
Mr. President, I've never been a Washington correspondent before.
Well, we're happy to have you, Colby, even though your paper isn't friendly toward me.
Well, naturally, I'm on, well, probation. Mr. Nickerson, he owns the paper. Mr. Nickerson's got his eye on me, naturally.
Naturally.
If I turned in an inaccurate story, he'd be angry, naturally.
Naturally.
Or a story that's so hot, a newspaper term, Mr. President, so hot and still so fantastic that, well, naturally.
Naturally, you... Colby, what are you trying to say?
Mr. President, I have information which leads me to believe you have cancer.
That's quite correct, Colby.
What?
How did you find out?
Well, an intern I know at a hospital in New York. This is terrible, Mr. President.
It's a malignant growth in the roof of my mouth. About the size of a quarter, that's all.
But cancer?
Exactly. And I'm arranging for an operation to have it removed within a day or two. If I can arrange a political truce with my opposition.
And you'll be all right?
Colby, what are you going to do with your story?
Well, that's what I came to ask you, Mr. President.
It's tough, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
I mean, being a newspaper man, having a big, exclusive story and not... It is a big story, isn't it?
Oh, the biggest. The President of the United States...
Why, besides that?
Well, just now, in these times...
What do you think of these times, Colby?
It's the worst and longest depression we've ever had, isn't it?
That's right. Colby, all because of the fight between those who want money backed by silver and those who want money backed by gold. Now, which side are you on? Personally, I mean.
The sound money, sir. As far as I understand it, just the way you are. I mean...
I know. Now, if the country suddenly learned I had cancer, just when this fight is at its peak, what do you think would happen?
It'd scare people to death, Mr. President. Everybody, that is, except your opposition.
Colby, do you understand what I'm getting at?
You don't want me to turn in the story.
It's a hard choice, isn't it?
Mr. Nickerson would break me if he ever found out.
I think it's a choice you have to make. The only people who know anything about this are the doctors, myself, and you. You see, I'm trusting you fully.
I appreciate that, sir.
I'm glad, Colby. Yes? Oh, come in, Miss Sarah.
Mr. President.
Yes?
I... Good day, sir. Good day, Miss Sarah.
Good day, Mr. Colby.
Miss Sarah, I wish I had your faculty of knowing in advance what people are going to do.
Colby, what about?
Oh, nothing, really. Well, now it all depends on my visit with the Vice President.
Won't you listen to reason?
I'll listen to you, Mr. Edwards. I've been anxious, too.
We all agree on the facts. We have a terrible depression. But you and the misguided people who follow you believe only in gold. Mark my words, Mr. President, you cannot handcuff mankind with chains of gold.
Mr. Edwards, you promised me reason, not oratory.
Reason says mint more silver, minted by the millions.
Mr. Edwards, I invited you here to make a proposal.
Yes?
A truce between us from now until Congress reconvenes next fall.
So, Mr. President, you admit defeat.
Aye, defeat.
It's the losers who propose truces.
You refuse to cooperate.
We speak for millions of Americans who have every right to oppose you, and they do, sincerely, honestly. What right have we to muzzle ourselves?
Mr. Edwards, maybe if calm and confidence can be reestablished, we can save the railroads from bankruptcy. But if they go...
That's a risk we must run.
Very well, sir. If you won't wait, we'll fight it out long before that.
I don't understand.
I'll call Congress into special session at the earliest possible date. I'll ask for immediate repeal of the Silver Clause of the Sherman Act.
What?
You don't like that, do you? You should have accepted the truce. Earliest possible date, Miss Sarah, a special session of Congress.
Mr. President, is there no way to avoid it?
We'll have to make it the 7th of August.
But you're wearing yourself
the
out.
The sooner it's held, the better. The longer
Mr.
we go on...
Mr. President, you're not listening.
What? Why, I heard every word you said. You said
I
that...
said... I'm scared stiff that you're ruining your health.
Miss Sarah, you're turning into a warrior. I'm as strong as an ox.
The people didn't elect an ox. They elected you, and you're human. Only too human sometimes.
You don't want me to take afternoon catnaps, do you? Besides, I haven't got the time.
Oh, yes, you have.
What?
If you didn't make appointments that I know nothing about.
Appointments? What? Who?
That Mr. Mott is waiting to see you again.
Well, why didn't you say so? Show him in.
Will you come in, Mr. Mott?
No, thank you.
Well, you must have worked fast, Dr. Mott.
Time is of the essence, Mr. President. I've arranged everything in my private hospital in New York. Now, as to the necessary precautions...
Doctor... We've got to postpone the operation.
Postpone it? Impossible, Mr. President.
I told you this morning I was planning a certain political maneuver, and it didn't work.
Mr. President, I don't believe you grasp the urgency of this. It's cancer.
I do, Doctor, but I...
Mr. President, I have only one duty in this matter. I am a doctor. I am obligated to my own professional principles. They come first.
Now, look here, Doctor. I've got professional duties, too.
Well, none as pressing as your health and your life.
I think I'm of less importance than the people of this country.
Then, sir, I'm afraid my journey here has been wasted. But I warn you, sir, it's your life.
Thank you, Doctor.
Good afternoon, Mr. President.
Goodbye, Doctor. Goodbye, Mr. Mott.
Goodbye, Mr. Mott. That really was the last one, Mr. President, wasn't it?
Yes.
I'm afraid I made you angry before. I'm sorry.
Oh, nonsense.
Ralph says he has a nice dinner for you.
Uh-huh.
You will eat it, won't you? Slowly and calmly.
Yes, Miss Sarah. You wanted to say something else?
No, Mr. President. Good night.
Good night.
Soup you want, Mr. President?
Yes, I can't eat, Ralph. It's stuffy in here, isn't it? Open a window, will you?
Yes, sir.
That's better. I needed some fresh air. What's that?
Sir?
I smelled something cooking.
Your lamb chops on the table, sir.
No. Come over here. Smell it.
That's coming from the servants' quarters, sir. Corned beef and cabbage.
Corned beef and cabbage? Why wasn't I given that?
Oh, it's only corned beef and
cabbage.
Well,
it smells wonderful, and I'm going down to get some.
Why, Mr. President.
Mrs. Burton, I want some of that corned beef and cabbage you're eating.
Oh, Mr. President, Landy me in the kitchen.
Well, it's too lonely upstairs, Mrs. Burton. Have mercy on me.
Ralph, you take some of this right upstairs for the president.
I got a dish already.
Not upstairs, Ralph. Right here. May I sit at your table, Mrs. Burton?
Oh, Landy me. Well, give the president a chair, Ralph.
After you, Mrs. Burton. Please.
Oh, Landy me.
That's better. Now, Ralph, don't be stingy.
I thought you wasn't hungry, sir.
Whatever gave you that idea?
I hope you like the way it's fixed, Mr. President.
I could tell I would from upstairs.
Here it is, sir.
Thank you, Ralph. Mmm. I knew it. You must eat too, Mrs. Burton.
Oh, I'm eating, Mr. President. Or trying to.
It's funny. Every now and then, I just can't eat alone.
I guess, sir, you're so used to having people around you all day.
And it's just as funny. When I want to be alone, I can't. Do you have that trouble, Mrs. Burton?
The Lord said we never can be alone.
Yes.
Not really, Mr. President.
You're quite right. But just so far as people are concerned, there's virtually nowhere in this continent I can go and not have the whole country know about it.
Well, that's natural, sir. We're all interested in how you get on.
But suppose I had to get away secretly.
Secretly?
Oh, just for a few days. There's nowhere I can go, on land or sea. People would follow me.
Follow you? Oh, why, Mr. President, only the Lord can walk on the water.
Yes, that's right. And I... Mrs. Burton, you've given me a wonderful idea. Ralph.
Yes, sir.
Call the Carlton Hotel. Get Mr. Mott over here quickly. And Ralph, tell Colby, the newspaper man, I want to see him the first thing in the morning.
Yes, sir.
Since I saw you yesterday morning, Colby, the operation was first canceled and now it's on again.
Oh, I'm glad of that, sir.
Now, if I have your cooperation...
Somehow I wish I'd never stumbled on this
but
story.
But you did, and now I want you to know all about it. The one place I can think of that I would be safe from observation is a boat.
A boat? An operation for cancer on a boat?
We're borrowing a private yacht. I'm going to New York where the yacht is moored. In fact, I'm leaving in the next few minutes. We'll move up the East River into Long Island Sound. The operation will be performed tomorrow morning, and then 4 days of recuperation.
Still, people will wonder where you are, sir, won't they?
Officially, I'll be on my way to my summer home. Now, how about it, Colby? Can I depend on you?
Mr. President, I won't write or speak a word about it until you allow me to.
And remember, not even to Miss Sarah.
No, sir. Good luck, sir. And thank you.
Thank you, Colby. And ask Miss Sarah to come in, will you?
Certainly. Miss Sarah.
Yes, young man. Good day. Yes, Mr. President?
Miss Sarah, I'm going to leave you with a great responsibility.
Leave me? What do you mean, Mr. President?
I'm going away for 5 days.
For a rest?
Only in a manner of speaking. While I'm gone...
If not for a rest, what for, then?
I'm not going to tell you, Miss Sarah.
Oh?
You'll be swamped by newspaper men demanding to know where I am. I want you to say, I don't know. At least until I reach my summer home.
I can say I don't know even if I do know.
You'd be lying, and I'd rather you were able to tell the truth.
I'm sorry you don't trust me, Mr. President.
Miss Sarah, when it's over, I'll tell you all about it. And then you... Oh, hello, Mr. Mott.
Are you ready to go, Mr. President?
Yes. Remember, Miss Sarah, I don't know.
Mr. President, your hat and coat.
Thank you, Ralph.
Excuse me, a messenger just put something on the desk.
We haven't too much time, sir.
I'm ready now.
Mr. President, this is for you.
Oh, thank you. Good Lord.
What is it?
The Reading Railroad has just gone into bankruptcy.
Most urgent that I see the president.
It's impossible, Mr. Edwards.
Impossible? Do you want me to regard that as an affront?
I mean the president isn't here, and so it's impossible for you to see
him.
Not
here. Where is he?
He's on his way to his summer home.
Summer home? The railroads are in bankruptcy, and he disappears?
If you'll give me a letter, Mr. Edwards, I'll forward it to him.
A telegram would be quicker.
I'd much prefer to forward a letter for you.
There's another way, sir.
Huh? Who are you, sir?
Hello, Miss Sarah.
How do you do?
Miss Edwards, you and I haven't met before. I'm Rodney, Central News Syndicate.
Hmm. You said there's another way to reach the president?
Give me a statement for publication. The president will see that wherever he is. Well, what do you, Miss Sarah?
Mr. President, if you're ready.
Certainly, Doctor.
We've decided against a complete anesthesia. It might affect your heart.
I'm sure local anesthesia will be all right.
There may be some pain in the latter stages.
It can't be helped, can it?
We'll try to avoid it.
Gentlemen, while you're operating, I'm going to be thinking of my message to Congress. If I feel anything through that, why, it'll have to be pretty bad. Now, let's get it over with.
All right, sir. Anesthetic, Dr. Raymond.
The needle may hurt, Mr. President.
Go ahead. You were right.
In just a moment, one whole side of your face and jaw will be numb. you'll feel nothing at all.
Well, that's very encouraging, Doctor.
Just relax, Mr. President.
Your gloves, Doctor?
Yes. Yes, thank you. Just slip them on over my hands, please. Feeling a tingle, sir?
Yes, a bit.
It will take only a moment longer. Oh, the anesthetic will make it impossible for you to speak, Mr. President.
That's so? What a wonderful treatment this would be for the Vice President.
The jaw brace, Dr. Raymond?
Yes. Open your mouth, sir. Hey, there we are.
That's it. Now, tell me if you feel anything, sir.
Uh-uh.
Good. Anesthesia is complete. All right, Dr. Raymond. First incision.
National crisis. Doesn't the president realize that he is the man responsible for the country's welfare? That'll do it, Mr. Rodney. Good day, Miss Sarah.
Mr. Edwards, before you go, maybe Miss Sarah will answer a question.
I'll try, Mr. Rodney.
Is the president ill?
Ill? The president ill?
What makes you ask that, Mr. Rodney?
I've heard rumors, and it's my job to verify if possible.
Well, is it a rumor, or is he ill? What's wrong with him?
We've got to know, Miss Sarah.
A sick man can't lead the country through these times. Now, will he deliver his message to Congress, or won't he be able to?
Gentlemen, the president has the responsibility of leading the country. Whether you agree with him or not, that's his duty. To carry it out, he needs a few days' rest. Won't you please let him have it?
And he is at his summer home?
I beg you not to disturb him.
Oh, no, I just want to check on him. Send a man to the president's summer home. He isn't there.
I'm sure you've made some mistake.
Where is he, Miss Sarah?
He'll be there, I tell you.
What day, Miss Sarah? And he's still not there. What's happened?
He's simply taking his time, that's all, Mr. Rodney.
I had a message in the press room that you wanted to see me, Miss Sarah.
Yes, Mr. Colby. This telegram came for you. Marked, as you see, confidential.
Oh, thank you. It's from the president, Miss Sarah, at his summer home.
Is it indeed?
Listen, had excellent cruise and never felt more confident. Miss Sarah, I'm going to let out a yell.
What?
Yippee! Dance with me, Miss Sarah.
Mr. Colby, you're in the White House.
And he said he's confident. Mr. Edwards won't enjoy that when he speaks to Congress.
And so it is clear that to reestablish the confidence of the people in our dollar, the silver clause of the Sherman Act should be repealed. We must close ranks not behind the banner of inflation, but under the standard of gold and the honest dollar. That, and that alone, can lead us to the prosperous destiny which is the right of the American people. You excited, Miss Sherry?
You've won.
They've repealed?
You'll have the official notification tomorrow.
Well, I must say, you don't look very happy.
Oh, I am about that, but Mr. Colby showed me a copy of his story.
About the operation?
I didn't know that I was so untrustworthy. You confided in him, but not in me.
I told you, Miss Sherry, I didn't want you to have to lie.
I lie very well when I have to.
But you had so many other things to worry about. Oh, Colby, come in. Where are you going?
I've come to say goodbye, Mr. President.
Oh, you've been promoted, eh? Well, that's fine, Colby.
Mr. Nickerson fired me, sir.
He what?
His telegram said, I want reporters working for me, not fiction writers.
He doesn't believe the story?
Not a word of it. But just the same, sir, it's been a great honor to have had your confidence.
Miss Sherry, a telegram for this Mr. Nickerson.
Yes, Mr. President.
Oh, please don't, Mr. President.
Dear Mr. Nickerson, if Colby is a fiction writer, I am too. His story of my journey on a yacht with medical details is 100% fact. If you don't want Colby to return to your payroll, I'm sure my administration can find a place for a
A fiction writer of his abilities. Sincerely, etc., and so forth. Is that all right?
Oh, Mr. President, I have to go right out on the lawn.
What for?
Mr. Colby wants to let out a yell.
A yell?
Thank you, Mr. President. Good night.
Good night, Colby. Well, Miss Sari, you're still pouting.
Perhaps you'd rather I let out a yell, too.
But if I told you about the operation beforehand, you'd have worried so.
I did worry.
But not over the...
The operation? Oh, I knew all about that.
What?
The second time you and Mr. Mott came, you and he were almost shouting at each other.
Miss Sari, you've been eavesdropping again.
Quite so, Mr. President. It's my job. Good night, Mr. President.
Good night, Miss Sari. Yes, that's just about how it happened. I actually had that operation aboard a yacht, and the cure was complete and permanent. And repealing the silver clause of the Sherman Act gradually brought the country back to prosperity. Have you guessed yet who I was then? It really did happen, you know. Oh, yes. It's a true story, and it happened in 1893 when Grover Cleveland was Mr. President in his second term. And here's another interesting thing. That newspaper man, his real name was Holland, published a story, but it was 24 years after Dr. Mott wrote his memoirs that people really believed him. Well, will you drop in again next week? I've got another story I know you'll enjoy. Good night.
Mr. President, on Tune 2 yesterday, Edward Arnold was Grover Cleveland in a July 3rd, 1947 broadcast from ABC. And that brings to a close this hour of True History on Tune 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.